It wasn't an animal and it wasn't a human. It was sort of like instantly I knew that was a demon. And I'd never heard one before in my life. And all of a sudden just this fear comes over me and I'm freaking out. And so I tell my friend and I'm like, I can't go to sleep. I'm so afraid, you know. Did you hear that noise, you know? We were all in bed and it was quiet and it was dark and we were going to sleep. Next minute, all these kids were acting like they were possessed. It scared the life out of me. I had to hurt him in such a way to be able to run because he smashed my phone. I tried to call the police and he grabbed my phone, he was strong, and just smashed it in his hands. All this time, for the last 6 years, you've believed God told you that he was coming back. So what do you make of it? What do you make of all of this and what you felt God was saying, and was it God and was it not? And that really upset me because I'm like, I don't know, and therefore I don't even really know God. Like, I've screwed this all up, you know? So I grew up in a so-called Christian home. Went to an Anglican church. Dad apparently one day heard from the Holy Spirit when he was in the car that, and they had been brought up in Anglican churches, you know, it was religious, and that to send his family to church. And so we started going when, I don't know, I'm guessing was I 5 or maybe younger. And so he obeyed and would take us to church pretty much every week, every Sunday. And then my first encounter with God was when I'm guessing was about 11, and I went to a Christian camp we often did over the summer holidays. And there was a guy called Ian McCormick, and he was a New Zealander, and at the time I think he was living overseas. And he ended up, you can actually see his story. He's got a movie out. It's called...
Very cool. You should
watch it. I
think it's
called The Perfect...
The Perfect Wave. Ian McCormick. It's a very neat story. She got to actually meet
him. Hang on. Is it something surfing? So anyway, so he was a kid that grew up. He wanted to surf. He came from a Christian home. Anyway, he went for a trip all around the world surfing, and he ended up dying because he got stung by...
In Australia, a box jellyfish. Yes. The most deadly...
And so he was declared dead. Anyway, he has an encounter where he goes to heaven and then he comes back.
He finds out he's going to hell.
So then he comes back and he tells people about his story. So, and so he came to the Christian camp. He was the guest speaker. And so as soon as I heard that story, it's like I had been brought up in the church, but all of a sudden it's like now I have met Jesus, you know, God for myself. I've just had this interaction with him. And I can't really remember all the details, but I remember feeling him. Like, I was just completely enamored, overwhelmed. All the other kids after the meeting all wanted to, you know, escape the meeting because they'd been stuck in the hall for so long listening that they just wanted to get out and socialize and do their thing. I'm not. I just want to stay.
How old were you?
Probably 11, 12, 11 maybe.
Oh, really?
Ish, I'm guessing. Between 10 and 12, somewhere around there. And I don't want to leave. I just want to stay. I don't want to move. I don't want to leave the hall. I'm feeling God's presence and it's absolutely incredible. And like I'm crying and I'm just feeling his love and feeling his awesomeness and bigness and power. And I'm just like awestruck. And so I'm just like, no, I don't want to leave. I just want to stay here. I don't ever want to leave. This is just amazing. I've never felt this in my life. And so me and my friend were the last to leave. So that was my probably first encounter where I'm like, okay, I know God is real for me and he's my God, you know what I mean? And then I had a situation where, like you, Angel, I heard demons. I've never seen one. It was called Kids for Christ. And we went up to the top of the North Island and we were doing tours and we would do drama acting of heaven and hell, and it was evangelizing, and we were young. I think I was about 12-ish. And so we were evangelizing to people. People were giving their lives to the Lord after watching our dramas and singing and all this sort of thing. And there was one night we were staying in a Māori marae.
These are the native people, Māoris. They're the native people.
Where they've got all these carvings on their buildings.
Pagan symbols.
On their marae. And it's all carving and it's quite demonic when you see, like, they're sticking out their tongues. It's quite...
There's a lot of anger in the
carvings. Yeah. And so before they allowed us, we were actually going to be sleeping in the marae. And so before we went in, the leaders went in and prayed, and apparently it was all clean, you know. But there was also, just outside of the marae, there was a sun god stone, you know, the stone circle.
Yeah.
And they do ceremonies there.
Yeah.
And so we got told, don't go near it, stay away. And we didn't. We were so busy doing these tours, we just came back for the night. Anyway, we were all in bed. We're all in this hall, and there were all these beds, boys on one side, girls on the other. And we were about to go to sleep, and I hear a high-pitched scream, just like your brother said. But instantly my spirit knew that it wasn't human. It wasn't an animal, and it wasn't a human. It was sort of like instantly I knew that was a demon, and I'd never heard one before in my life. And all of a sudden just this fear comes over me, and I'm freaking out. And so I tell my friend, and I'm like, I can't go to sleep. I'm so afraid, you know. Did you hear that noise, you know? And then next minute, and it wasn't like Chinese whispers where she told the rest of the hall, and it was a big, massive hall, like there was heaps of kids. It wasn't that it went Chinese whispers that there's something demonic outside. No. All of a sudden this manifestation happened throughout the whole camp of all the kids in this room. And these kids started acting like we were all in bed, and it was quiet and it was dark and we were going to sleep. Next minute, all these kids were acting like they were possessed. It scared the life out of me. And they were manifesting. It was just, and the leaders had to come in.
Like screaming.
Yes, it was, and going like nuts. I can't quite remember because it was so terrifying. I think I just tried to block it out. But they were acting in ways that these kids just
didn't. But you were not.
No. I wasn't.
The only one?
No, there were others that were, you know, level, but there were a handful. And the handful that were the ones that were a little bit problem children. You know, they were the difficult ones that you knew things weren't right with them. Like they had like either unforgiveness or an anger or whatever you
could. Abuse.
Yeah. And so these were those kids. And it was kind of interesting. It's like, so the leaders had to come in and sleep amongst us because nobody could go to sleep. We were terrified. Mm-hmm. And we were scared that next minute we might manifest, you know, like what's happened to them? Is it going to now happen to me and take over me, you know? So we were like, so after that, every year it's like demons would come to the anniversary, and I didn't figure out until it happened like a couple of years in a row. And I couldn't figure out why at a certain date of the year I would go through a patch where I could not sleep all through the night. I was scared. I didn't want to sleep with the lights off. And I realized, well, my parents did, that it was the anniversary of the date that it happened at the marae, that every year it would come back to haunt me. Until I had some Christian friends come and pray for me and break it off, that's when it stopped. They came in and they prayed over the kids, but they had to remove them because everybody was starting to freak out, you know. And they're having to look. There's no parents except for a couple of elders, you know, running the joint. So they're probably freaking out because thinking that we're responsible for all these kids, and we were hours away from home. Yeah, so that was kind of freaky. And then
you were made to be really afraid of hell, the movie. That's another time that you really got quickened.
Oh, that was after though, Relentless Heart.
Yeah.
When I really started to take God seriously, and I watched the movie called, it's called Pan, you know, it's like the Peter Pan, but it's Pan. And all these kids, they capture them and they stick them in the mine. And so I'm watching this movie, and normally I'd watch a movie like that and I'd be fine. And it's meant to be a family movie. It's not a horror movie or anything. I mean, but I'm watching these kids in this, and they're captured, and they are in this mine, and it's dark. And all of a sudden this fear comes over me, and I can feel hell. Like I'm watching it with my parents because at that time I'd separated from my ex, my spouse, and we're sitting in the lounge and everyone's all fine. And all of a sudden this absolute fear comes over me, and I feel crippled. Like I'm shaking, I can barely breathe, I can just feel the fear of hell, like the realness of it. It's like I can touch it. And all of a sudden I am freaking out, crying. I'm thinking about all these people that I know in my life that are going there. And, oh my gosh, I've never felt hell so real. It's like I touched it. And it became real to me that day. Yeah, and so I'm talking to my parents about our friends, you know, and, you know, they don't live in obedience to God. They just think because they believe in his name that they're saved. And so I'm starting to worry for them now. And I've never had a worry because I was easy believism. As long as you believe in Jesus, you're all good. I can't really say when I had, I think the time I was born again was with Ian McCormick at that camp. But then when I basically had my first serious boyfriend, which is the guy I married, that's when, like, I knew you can't have sex before marriage, but that's what ended up happening. And I felt a distance between God. And it was weird because, you know, like there was that lie where, oh, we're going to get married anyway. And I think the reason why God gives us that rule is because, you know, because of the people that have casual sex, you know, but this is serious and we're going to get married. So what's the difference? And so I'm like convinced. But from that time on, I couldn't sing any Christian songs. Every time I heard a Christian song, I'd bawl my eyes out. I felt the guilt. I felt the filth, you know. I felt, oh, it was so horrible. The condemnation, it was terrible. I couldn't talk about God. I couldn't sing to God. I couldn't go to church. It was like it totally distanced me from him. And to the point where I was like, I can't do this anymore. We're not, you know, and we were engaged. And so we were like, we went through like a celibacy kind of thing for 2 years before we got married because I'm like, can't do it. I can't go without God. But I still didn't know God like I did. I didn't know about the obedience thing. I didn't know about walking with him and him being Lord of my life. It was just, once again, I believe in him. I pray to him occasionally and hope all goes well with my life, that he's watching and that everything, because I grew up in I went from Anglican to charismatic, that as long as you've got God in your life, everything will work out peachy. Prosperity, health-wise, everything. And so God used that marriage to draw me to him and to draw me to the truth and to shake me out of that easy believism and that complacency with him. And so, but he used a lot of years of that hideous marriage to get me to a point where I surrendered. It took a long time. And he knew exactly how long it was going to take and what was needed, to the point where he gave me a promise to say he was coming back, and that wasn't the case at all. But he used that as leverage to draw out the suffering in me, to get me to a place where I'm like, okay, God, I surrender. But what happened is when he got really bad, he was going to the gym and he was now taking, so he was always on drugs and he was heavily into drinking. And he was a person that had a whole lot of unforgiveness and a really bad childhood. His parents were never together to begin with, and he had an abusive father and hard time at school. He was sort of coming and going, and then he had another child to somebody else, and then, which is Kitty's half-sister, then towards the end, before I kicked him out and the divorce happened, he was taking a whole lot of steroids and things that you take to get big at the gym, and it causes anger. It actually, and, you know,
there's to reach.
And he said to me, he said, by the way, I'll get a lot more aggressive and angry.
Oh, he said that?
Yeah. And I'm like, well, why are you taking it? Because he was naturally an angry person anyway. And so it scared me, but it was like he was giving me a heads up, and I'm like, oh, great. And at the time, he's living in my house, a house I'd bought while we were separated for Keely and I. And so he's living there. And it got to a point one night where he was hallucinating. He started to scare the girls. And he believed it. He believed that there were people outside with red lasers that could see through the walls, and that be careful when you're getting undressed because they're going to see you naked. There are people outside surrounding our house looking in. He believed it. And he would scare the girls. And this was one particular night where we went out to the end of our section and there was a netball court. Netball's a little bit like basketball, but it's a girl's sport. Yeah. And netball courts, and they had the big lights. And he said, there are people, they've climbed the lights, the stadium lights, and they're looking in at us. And so he took us to the edge of my yard and put the girls on his shoulders and said, see, kids, can you see the guys? They've climbed up, see, they're looking at us. And the kids are like, they don't know what to say. And I'm like, there's nobody there. There's no one there. Can't you see them? They're right there. See? And I'm like, there's no one. Anyway, he went down to the netball courts. It was pitch black. We didn't live in a very good area because I couldn't afford, you know, to live in a decent area. And so I thought that something had happened to him and he had got into a fight, because this obviously often happened with him, because he kind of provoked, you know, he was the kind of guy that, anyway. And so he came back up. He was totally off his face. I realized that he was hallucinating. He was on whatever drug, pee, probably meth. And he came into the house and he started to get aggressive with me. And I had to hurt him in such a way to be able to run because he smashed my phone. I tried to call the police and he grabbed my phone. He was strong and just smashed it in his hands. And so I hit him, got him where it hurt, and bolted, grabbed the keys and left the girls because they were asleep and they didn't know any different. And I knew he wouldn't go in and harm them, and drove to my parents' house. And then the police removed him the next day. And that was the end of the marriage. But it was like, okay, God, where are you in this? You told me that you were going to put my marriage back together. And so I'm like, okay, I obviously can't hear from you, God. I can't do Christianity. I struggled at school. I struggled with this. I'm obviously
not cut out for
this. Yeah.
So you were almost just giving up.
Oh, the yes. Whole thing. And I said to God, you know, I can never deny you. I'll always believe in you, God, because I can't not. I've experienced you. You know, I've felt, I know you're real, but I can't do this anymore. I can't live for you anymore because I just can't. I failed.
Because I can't figure it out. Yeah, I don't know how to do it as a way to please
you. And it's causing me too much suffering. You know, it's breaking my heart. So I was like, I'm out. And so that was the day that around the week that God led me to Relentless Heart. And I was like, okay, I'm out on you, God. And then Eve, my sister-in-law, texted me this message basically saying, all this time, for the last 6 years, you've believed God told you that he was coming back. So what do you make of it? What do you make of all of this and what you felt God was saying? And was it God and was it not? And that really upset me because I'm like, I don't know. And therefore, I don't even really know God. Like, I've screwed this all up, you know? And so I typed it all into Google, the whole message that she sent me, because I couldn't answer it. And I did it just to be smart, like with an attitude, like
sarcastic.
Sarcastic. Like, okay, yeah. Well, I don't know. I can't answer you, Eve. So I wasn't angry at her, but it really hurt. It hit a chord, you know. So I typed it in and just went, you know, enter kind of thing. And Relentless Heart, that was the only thing that came out.
Trusting God in the storm.
So I was at my friend's house cleaning and she's got a big house. It couldn't have happened if I was at home because I was a solo mum.
Did you have internet?
I didn't have internet.
That's right.
So it wouldn't have happened at home. I'm on her Wi-Fi. If I wasn't on her Wi-Fi, that wouldn't have happened. And so it comes up and I've only just started to clean. So I've got 3 hours. And it was a big house. I'll listen to this. I was like, well, what's this, you know? And so I've got my headphones in and away I go cleaning and I listen to the whole message. And at the end, I am a bawling mess and I have now just experienced the same God I did back when I was at that camp listening to Ian McCormick and where I really had that encounter with God. And right now I'm having this another encounter with God and I'm like, okay, God, no, I can't walk away. And I'm like, I need to be able to hear you like this guy. I need to walk with you like this guy. I want you like this guy. I want to know you. I want to hear you. I need to walk with you. I've got it, you know, it was such a priority to me. It's like, I've got to either have you like that or nothing. And so that's when it began. And then I realized that what he was teaching my spirit recognized that it was the truth. I didn't like it. I found it really hard to swallow. I remembered cleaning some houses when listening to some of his messages and I'd collapse on the ground in fear because I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, like I'm scared that God's going to allow me to suffer like him.
Yeah.
I also was scared about my sin because I always thought that I was so righteous because I was married to somebody who was a good sinner,
good at sinning. Yeah, yeah.
And so I looked real squeaky clean. So then I start to realize that actually I'm a sinner too and I'm destined for hell if I don't, you know, repent. And so here I am on my knees in people's houses, you know, the only person in the house, but crying and feeling scared and thinking, oh my gosh, you know. And because I had that hell encounter watching that movie Pan, I'm like, oh my gosh, I could be going there. Like, I didn't realize how serious this was. You can't just believe in Jesus and you're all good, because that's what I thought. And now I realize that, man, this is serious stuff. You know, this is a matter of life and death. And so I felt the seriousness for the first time. And that's when I'm like, I've just got to go forward. And regardless of how I, you know, how fearful I am and how scary this is, and yeah, it's not the happy, clappy, I love Jesus message at the charismatic church that I had, that I thought that I could just skip to heaven. Now I'm thinking, well, no, it's not that easy. This is narrow. This is a narrow path, you know? And I didn't like that. I was a little bit upset with Jesus, like, you know, God, like, why did you have to make it so narrow? Why can't you just make it easy for everybody? But I'm like, I'm not going to that hell place, because I felt that day, and I'm not going there. So I'll do the narrow road. And I thought, you know, I'd already gone through, you know, hell with my ex-spouse, with all of the fear, you know, through living with him and all of that, that I thought, well, I've suffered through this, then I can suffer through, and at least I'll be suffering with Jesus, and it'll be a righteous suffering. It's not a result of my core choices, you know, my unwise choices.
Right.
Beautiful. Consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's beautiful. Pretty much. Yeah, and he's like, I'm going to have to push her maybe further than what he even wanted to, but he knew that if he didn't push me that far, he wouldn't have got the results, you know?
And now it's the best thing in your life, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But it got me to a place too where I didn't want to be in the driver's seat of my life anymore. It's like I looked back and thought, I chose him. Mm-hmm. You know, I chose that guy because of how he looked, you know? And I chose.
Clearly she chose me for how I looked too.
Absolutely.
That's part two of the testimony, right, baby?
So I did all that choosing because I didn't know that God. I thought God was sitting on his throne up there and he just kind of looked down and would listen to our prayers, but I didn't think that he was that involved.
Yeah,
and you know,
proves everything that you do because you call yourself a Christian kind of thing.
Yes, and if you need help, he'll be there, but really you're just left to live the life that you want to live and you get to make your own choices and, you know, live a self-determined life. I thought that was the case. I thought that's how it worked. And then I realized after listening to his messages that no, it's not the case, that we have to become like children. He becomes our father and we look to him for everything and we're dependent and we want his will over ours, you know, and we need his guidance and we need to hear his voice to know which way to go. And I'm like, I didn't realize he was this involved. I didn't realize he wanted to be this involved. And then it's like, that's when I surrendered, because it's like, okay, God, I've messed up so many times. I don't trust myself to make any decisions. I'm done. I'm done with me. I'm over me, you know? So it's like, I want you to be in the driver's seat now. And so that's when I surrendered everything. And I remember it was really difficult because I'd put Kitty to bed. She was eight, about two and nine. She'd go to bed and I'd hold it all in. And then as soon as she was in bed, I'd just be in the lounge praying, but I'd be crying and crying and surrendering and surrendering and doing all that because I didn't want to upset her too much and have her worry about me. Yeah, after that, it was just like the old Lost Trail that he's filmed, where I went through all those stages. I went through stage after stage, the isolation stage, all of it. It's incredible. And there were some times where, like the whole grace concept, it took me a long time for me to get my head around that. I'd be like, how does this grace thing work? And he'd be teaching it. And it was like, you mentioned solid meat. It was like the meat was too chunky. I couldn't swallow it and I'd get choked on it. And I could feel it. It felt like I was choking on the message. Like I couldn't swallow it. And for it to digest and start to work through me, it was like it was stuck. The grace message, like how to overcome sin. How is it when God's power, like,
in other words,
when God empowers you to do
the
things.
Makes, if I can just explain.
Yeah.
The big church makes the mistake of teaching that grace is like basically God's free forgiveness and it's a big blue tarp that he throws over your sin. And that because you've, you know, given him allegiance and belief that he no longer sees your sin. And so even though you can't stop sinning, it's okay because you've said a prayer.
He's
forgiven you.
You know?
Rather than the scripture talks about,
we don't need to strive.
Fully understood grace in all its form. And so grace is the power to live like Jesus, not the permission to stay in sin. It's the power to get out of it. And that's why the Bible says you have to fully understand grace. And so that's what she was talking about.
I couldn't understand it. And I didn't realize there was a power available to us. You don't get that taught to you in the church, that there's an actual power, you know? And I was like, So I couldn't understand it. I remember talking to my sister-in-law on the phone, and neither could she. And we were like, we just couldn't. And then I, like you guys, went to God like a humble child and said, God, I just don't get this. I need you to help me to understand this. It's just not coming together. It's not clicking, you know? Like, please, Lord, help me understand. It was a few days later or a week later, and then Michael put out this message about that grace is like somebody climbing a mountain or something, and they're trying to get up on a ledge.
Father and the Son.
And then the Father goes to grab the hand, and so the person pushes off with their strength and does what they can, and Father helps pull at the same time. So it's like a team effort, and all of a sudden it's like I went from not understanding to all of a sudden, like, my eyes are open. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is simple. Like, why haven't I, you know, why didn't I get this earlier? And then I could swallow, and then it started to go down. It was incredible. And that's when I'm like, okay, God, I'm going to try this. And so I was starting to show signs of anger because of who I'd been married to for so long, because we got married when we were 21, and we were together at 16. And so Kelly was getting older, and when she was naughty, I would, with my voice, get quite, you know, like, to show my authority, would get quite angry and frighten her. And I was like, I don't like this. This is not who I am. It's like it's rubbed off. He has rubbed off on me, and I'm now, you know, treating her like he would treat me. And I was like, I don't want this. You know, he's gone now. This is our sanctuary. I don't want this kind of anger in our home. And so I'm like, God, you've got to help me. And so every time I started to want to raise my voice at her and get, I wouldn't call her names or anything or swear, but I would just get quite aggressive. I would start to feel it, and I'd run to my room and just get on my bed and say, oh, Lord, please, you know, give me the strength to overcome this. I don't want to be angry. You know, take this away from me. Forgive me of my sin. And I would get into the habit of doing that every time I'd feel this anger rising up in me. And then it was like a few months later, and I'd be responding to Keely, and I'd be like, hang on a minute. I didn't raise my voice. I didn't yell at her. I wasn't aggressive towards her. Like, where's it gone? And I didn't even notice. It was like, you know, when you're sick and you're sick for a while and you're like, you can't wait to get better. And then you start to get better and then you realize, hang on a minute, two days ago I was really sick in bed and now I'm better. Like, how did that?
And you knew you would have reacted for sure in that situation.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I could see that after praying and repenting and me being serious and also having the faith to believe that there was the power for him to change me, that all of a sudden I looked and thought, oh my gosh, I'm not doing what I used to do. And I was changed from that point on. It's not to say I didn't slip. There were times where I would slip, but I wasn't practicing it all the time like I was. It wasn't like a consistent thing. It wasn't who I was anymore, you know? And yeah, I was like, oh my gosh, this is God. And it was so exciting.
Sam, yeah, that's amazing to hear. Yeah. Yeah, that's what Angel was, you were asking me the other day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for listening. You did a fantastic job telling that from kind of start to finish. That was wonderful.
That was
Great job, sweetheart. Yeah. Praise the Lord.